Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Fake the Nation, episode 224.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we start painting a bunch of little blotches on the canvas that is democracy. And we keep going and going. We add more colors and brushstrokes and civil rights. And then we stand back several feet away until the impressionist art comes into focus and we realize that we're staring at the beauty that is America. You guys know that this is like a holiday for me. We're voting. And today we're going to talk about all things election. And finally, we'll also talk about the industry around the autumn craze. Yeah, because I think it's important to talk about something totally dumb to end the show. Today, I have the most amazing panel. I cannot express to you how grateful I am for this particular panel. They are fantastic. Joining us again, you've heard her on their show before. She's the voice of Melania Trump on Showtime's Our Cartoon President. She's a comedian and actor. You've seen her sort of everywhere. It is the one and only Cody Lindquist. Hey, Cody.
Hello.
So good to see you in this.
I just voted.
Oh.
I had to say that.
We're going to talk all about it. I want to hear.
Can't
I want to hear the
Can't
story. Also joining us for the very first time, this gentleman has been so very kind to me, lo these many years, but joining me on some of my various projects. He is the star of the movie Dark Divide that's out now in theaters, drive-in theaters, all sorts of anything theater that is happening. You can see it there, and it'll be streaming on November 10th. That's Dark Divide. You should absolutely watch it. And then when you're done doing that, you should watch like basically everything he's ever done because he's so hilarious. All of the specials, all of the TV shows. It is none other than David Cross. Hi, David Cross.
Hello. Hi. Hello.
David Cross was also in my second to last movie called The Muslims Are Coming, in which we did his interview in the laundry room of our building.
Yeah, were you living there?
I was living there.
Yeah, you were living there. That's how we met.
That's how we met, and you were just kind enough, basically knowing nothing about me, to be in my movie, which was really nice of you.
Well, you have a very strong, forceful, charming personality.
Well, so. Fuck! Can we make that immediately into a poster that I will put a fix onto all of my
pull
walls?
Quote.
Pool quote. But I jokingly said, oh, we could shoot it in the laundry room. And then you were like, not jokingly, that's where we'll shoot it. So we filmed.
Well, it was a great idea.
We filmed in the laundry room. Folks, we normally.
And was Eddie in it? Did Eddie make his way into that?
No. Our super Eddie was not in the movie. But he was really excited that Hollywood had come to our building.
I miss him. That's the thing I miss most
about the building.
The yeah.
He's fantastic. He's still fantastic. I see him on the street sometimes.
Yeah.
All right, folks. Normally we do three topics, but today we're going to do like a bunch of mini topics because we have so much to say about a yay old electoral process. So let's get into it with topic number one, which is just straight up voting. Let's talk about what's happening around the country. There are long lines. I myself have witnessed very long lines here in Manhattan. So my question for you both is, have you voted? Have you heard about people voting? What is your current voting story / plan?
I just voted this morning.
Yes.
Like an hour and a half ago, I voted, got a salad, and now I'm talking to you, which is very exciting.
Was there a long line in your precinct?
Yeah. So I vote at Madison Square Garden. Very exciting.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I got in line at 10:30 and I was out. It didn't open till 12. So I was one of the first people online. And then, it took me like 20 minutes. Here's a little hot tip. If you're voting in New York, they give you a stylus, you know, to sign your name when you get your ballot, which I knew about. I did not know that it is also a pen. So when I went to fill in the bubbles, I used the communal pen. That seems like a mistake.
Right. It's also a pen. And then they let you keep it as well. Is that right?
Yeah. So
yeah, they did
I
that during
it.
The
anyway,
primaries. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, that's I had to vote absentee during the primary, so I didn't get one then. Anyway, that's a hot tip if you're voting in Manhattan. The lines are, have been astronomically long everywhere.
Yeah.
I live like in Columbus Circle area, and there's like a Lincoln Center polling place too. And it's, yeah, it's been insane. Lines around the block.
David Cross, have the, where, what is the voting scenario where you are, and what does it make you feel like? Are you, does it worry you, excite you?
Well, I am registered in Sullivan County. I have a house up there, and I moved my registration there back in 2014, I think, so I could get, or 2016, so I could get rid of John Faso, and voted, Antonio Delgado in, who's amazing. He's great. And it, you know, it's one of those things where my vote means more.
Yeah,
or
it sure does.
Liberal progressive vote means more up there than it does in Brooklyn. So that's where I've been voting for the last, you know, however many elections that is. And this year, I did absentee because I had to go to Atlanta to finish some work. And so that vote was, you know, that, hopefully, I went on that vote tracker thing and I couldn't access any information.
not a good sign.
That seems seems quite 2020 to be like, they didn't figure it out.
But also Sullivan County, not knocking Sullivan County, but it's also, that is like, you know, all their stuff is very Texas Instruments, kind of Commodore 64.
Graphing calculators are running.
There's a lot of, toasters still in there. So they're a bit behind in that capacity. But where I live in Brooklyn, the nearest precinct, the big one is on, in Clinton Hill, is on, what is it? It's between, it's the,
Barclays Center?
I'm not, there is one at Barclays, but there's a closer one. Not the, I'm just spacing on it's not a church. It's
a
not
museum?
A
synagogue?
No, it's the, you'll have to cut this.
this is what the listeners tune in for, is this kind of indecision and forgetfulness.
Shriners. Come on, help me out.
I don't know.
It's like between Vanderbilt and Carleton, and it's the...
I'm a Manhattan girl, baby.
The something hall.
Same here.
The
something hall, ladies and gentlemen.
Two Manhattanites, right. We don't know.
All right, anyway. Everything I've heard is that they, and this applies to Barclays as well, but they're kind of intimidatingly long lines, but it's running very quickly. People are only, it's not taking that long for people outside of the, you know, the rush hour part of it.
Right.
But people have been moving pretty quickly. Everything I've heard from both places is it's running pretty efficiently and everybody's friendly and they've got pizza for people and blah, blah, blah.
There's a like a service. It's like a free pizza service. You call them and they'll come deliver pizza to the voting lines, which is like fantastic.
Are they individually wrapped slices? Because that feels very not COVID safe to just be
maybe they're little personal pizzas.
I saw Mariska Hargitay yesterday at Madison Square Garden was throwing sandwiches to people.
Well, that's
that is amazing. I really missed out.
What kind of sandwiches? You know what I mean? That's the first question that comes to my mind. So for some people are looking at this as voter suppression and some people are looking at it as voter enthusiasm. I have to say, in terms of voter suppression, yes, I can see someone like myself. I only had like 30 minutes to vote and I thought, oh, this might be one of those moments where there's nobody there. So I went to my place. I mean, it's two blocks away. I checked it out. There was, in fact, a very, very long line that would have taken me longer than 30 minutes. So I had to leave. I don't feel voter suppressed by that experience because I have more opportunities to go back and it's obviously a priority for me. But I do think that part of what we're seeing is a system in every state that wasn't anticipating this kind of turnout, right? And if you want to talk about turnout, which, guys, spoiler alert, I want to talk about turnout. Oh, yeah. What's your take?
I disagree with that. I think a lot of people did anticipate it, have for months, and were stymied in almost every way, and are continuing to be blocked from creating the most efficient means possible to vote. And I don't think those two things are, you know, suppression and enthusiasm are mutually exclusive.
Right.
I think you can have both. And there's clearly voter suppression in numerous different ways happening.
Well, it just should be easy. I mean, you know, we're all, the three of us sitting here, are fairly privileged people that have the time. And, you know, if you're working a minimum wage job, you can't
take off
work.
It should be a holiday. It should be a national holiday.
It should be a federal holiday. And it should be 2 weeks
holiday.
Before, you know, you can vote for 2 weeks before, and then actual voting is a national holiday. But that would require everybody to think that Everyone should vote, and half the country thinks that half of the people shouldn't vote and have that right.
Right, so, but I do have to say, I mean, that's definitely true in places. I've been getting reports from North Carolina and South Carolina, and the lines are long in those places as well. In a place like South Carolina, might be more interested in voter suppression, just given their political makeup. But in New York City, I can tell you know. I was a policy advisor for the campaign finance board in my years before being a comedian and some simultaneous to it, and which gives me absolutely no intel on the Board of Elections. But what I remember from my time there, and again, this is like 10 years ago, I remember thinking that, wow, the Board of Elections needs to be funded more. So in New York, I don't think there's an ideological, you know, disagreement
right.
over whether people should vote. I think in New York, people want to vote. But it's an issue of funding and making that a priority. And I have to say, for a party that loves voting and the idea of voting, we don't ever prioritize voting when it comes to policy. And so that, I think, is coming to bite us right in the dick.
Well, also, I think in some of these liberal strongholds like New York City, they want everyone to vote, you know, when it comes to voting in the actual, you know, the actual election. But in the primaries, they don't necessarily want that many people to come out because, you know, you want the traditional Democratic candidates to win. So I don't know. It feels like they also feel like, well, our electoral votes are going to go to Joe Biden. So yes, voting in New York is important and voting down ballot is super important. But, you know, I don't know if people feel like our vote counts as much for the president.
Yeah, and that's
right,
what's funny about the long lines is that New York is already in the bag. You know what I mean? It's a taken for granted.
Also,
we matter not at all. Like, we didn't matter during the primaries. We continue not to matter.
And our primary vote matters in a lot of ways more than our
right, but, which didn't matter this time around.
General election vote.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like by the time I got there, my representatives were, you know, aren't running against anybody because, you know, if you voted for them in the primary, you win your primary. There's no Republicans running against the Democrats in
right.
a Democratic state.
Well, I'm going to move on to other issues within the electoral universe. But first, let's take a quick break and hear about our sponsors, whom we love. And then when we come back, we'll talk about other things. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8-exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
And we are back and we're ready for topic number B. So you guys, there's rumors about Biden and Hunter Biden and Biden making money off of foreign blah, blah, blah. And it's all very confusing. And so just a quick like sense here. Have any of these rumors registered with you? David Cross, do you know at all like what are the specifics of anything I'm talking about?
Are you talking about the Ukrainian stuff? Or are you talking about the laptop with the, the supposed?
Right. There's a laptop with some emails on it. There's another set of 25,000 emails that were dumped that has nothing to do with that laptop, but has to do with maybe someone giving their Gmail password away or something. There's a lot of different characters involved and a lot of shady and possibly unethical journalism, unclear. But yeah, there's a bunch of different stories. And I just wonder if any of them have sort of registered with you as a real story, as someone who consumes, I'm assuming, truth-based journalism.
Well, I'm assuming it's truth-based as well, so we can't be too careful.
Right.
I'm aware of it, and I suppose we're inundated with so much stuff, especially as we ramp into these last couple weeks here, that I don't spend too much time trying to verify whether those things are legit, because they seem, and they're being told to me by reputable
sources,
journalists, that they are not legit. And I know about the Steve Bannon, the Chinese guy, his boat, his laptop, he got this, they got, so Giuliani sent the Ukrainian guy, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't, to my discredit, I haven't really done a deep dive to figure out if it's legit or not, but it seems just as a educated guess, that it is not legitimate at all. So I kind of move on to other things.
Right.
Feels like all the details are just recycled. They're trying to get the talking points out that are the same talking points about Hillary in 2016.
Yeah.
Like, here's some emails. We don't know what's in the emails. Like, if we just say emails, we're all going to lose our fucking
mind.
Here's the
thing. I get the sense that this was their October surprise,
yeah,
and this was in the works for a while, and it's clearly not sticking, and they're kind of freaking out. I would say as of about 2 or 3 days ago, you can see this kind of shift, and it's just not landing the way. And now their talking points are all like, the media is trying to bury this news, and that's all they've got. And it feels to me like they truly did not expect this to just
fall flat
and not have the impact. And I don't think they have anything else. And I think they thought Hunter Biden, was high and he was getting a foot job from a prostitute or whatever. And nobody gives a shit.
Right.
And nobody gives a shit because these motherfuckers have set the bar so low. That's nothing.
Right.
We don't give a fuck
we
anymore.
We all have a brother
sister. Sure, that would be something to talk about. No one gives a shit about the son of a guy who was fucked up in Las Vegas and got a foot job. Nobody. Why would we give a fuck?
I know.
At this point. And it's because of them. That's on them.
Right.
Also, it's so weird to me that your attack would be about his son when your children are literally the worst people that are getting so much money for, it's like, how can you you know, how can you talk about this if you have this example, which is not good on your own? Do you want to like really bring that over?
That's a rational viewpoint. That's what a rational person,
right.
A person
None
who is somewhat even keeled and takes all the information in, that's how they would consider that, that information. But these people aren't.
My favorite takeaway, though, was that Joe Biden is just a nice dad who's like, I love you no matter what, son,
right.
And you've worked really hard to clean yourself up.
That definitely came through in the debate.
I'm like, oh, you know, that's
I want to point out, we read a piece in The Atlantic by Ann Applebaum called You're Not Supposed to Understand the Rumors About Biden. And just even hearing, like, Cross hearing you, like, do that weird summary with a boat and, like, Julian, and I don't even know the seven things you said and the names you said. It is really hard to kind of track these stories. There's too many characters. It's like, you know, it needs a rewrite. Like their October surprise needs like a deep rewrite so that it lands
well,
with
you're,
people.
You're not supposed to track the characters. You're just supposed to hear, get outraged by the
like
candidate's
some kind of
son doing this thing.
Right.
And once you get past that, and it quickly got past that, they didn't have any answers for that. They weren't expecting people to, you know, connect the dots so quickly and readily. And they just thought it was going to be a butthurt emails type of situation.
Right.
It clearly wasn't for reasons we talked about.
I'm also just really sick of politicians having to have squeaky clean families and squeaky clean relationships. Like, I don't really care if they're not corrupt in what they're doing. You know, they're not doing anything corrupt. Like, I don't care if their brother sucks or like none of that matters to me.
Right.
And I feel like we're maybe moving in that direction.
Yeah, foot jobs
maybe Trump
don't
has
matter.
Pushed us over there where it's like, all right, you know, fine.
Yeah.
Your sister resign.
One of the things that I don't want to give the media too much credit, but I do feel like this is a little bit of a sign of growth that, you know, there were these email dumps in 2016. And in 2016, it seemed like, oh, shit, there's all these emails. That definitely means a bunch of people are fucking guilty, right? Like, just the notion of an email dump meant some kind of horrible scandal. But now, and this is what Anna Applebaum points out in her piece, she wrote, in 2016, American journalists weren't yet attuned to the many ways in which masses of irrelevant hacked material could be used to waste their time. Now they are. So I like the idea here that the media isn't like, you know, they're just not being roped into some email
right.
shit that's going to be a waste of their time.
I think that's a very generous assessment of the media, which is, you know, not completely a monolith. It's
sure.
made up of all kinds of different personalities and biases. But I think the media is every day there's another example of something that is so outrageous to, I think, any of us who've been following any of these things. Like, how are you still doing this? How can you still be, you know, after the debate, crediting Trump for not, you know, taking a shit on stage and like that now he's president? Like, that shit is still happening.
Yeah, we finally had a civil debate.
Yeah, I mean, it's the media is still doing the same shit that got us here. And they're only wary of email dumps just because they got burned on it. You know, until they get burned on everything, they won't reassess and they won't stop and reprioritize.
But I do think there has been a little bit of that, like, okay, let's not immediately assume an email dump is newsworthy. And I think that's something we've seen from mainstream outlets. Whereas in 2016, I mean, motherfuckers were broadcasting not one, not two, but every single Trump rally. It was on TV, not part of it. The entire rally.
Right.
Do you guys remember that? And so he was getting just free advertising, and that's not something that happens anymore, thank God.
But do you think part of it is that they're also inundated with so much from Trump? You know, Trump does this,
right.
Trump leaves a bunch of Nebraska supporters to die of hypothermia, you know, at a rally last night. That if the Biden or if the Hunter Biden stuff had come at a time where there was more of a lull,
right.
There was so much going on.
Yeah, they're like, they're working
against
their own strategy.
They had the time to be like, Yeah, they have the time to be like, we don't have time to, you know, we have morals and we're not going to cover this. Whereas if it were a slow news week, which who can remember when a last slow news week was? Maybe they would have just been like, well.
That's an interesting point.
I think there's something to that for sure. Yeah. Yeah. But those days are long gone. Those days are long gone.
All I want is to just not care about this for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Just have a 2 week mental vacation. Like, you know, just thinking about Joe Biden just making some like choice that I don't have to worry about. Like, I don't have to think about every single fucking thing that he does seems enjoyable.
It's
luxurious.
It just sounds luxurious.
Just luxurious.
That's not going to happen either. I mean,
no,
if he gets into office and we start seeing some of these people he's nominating for cabinet posts, and you're like, wait, what?
Who
is Ben Carson?
Progressive
Ben Carson.
Also
have to get, you know.
We also have to get through the next
if
he wins.
There's so many progressives holding his feet to the fire. I can't imagine like craziness
happening.
But
I need a 2 week holiday.
I can imagine
a mental
couple
health
of like very moderate
holiday.
People. But either way, I think if this works in our favor, you'll get a little break. You know, we'll all get.
But
to you, like
your holiday isn't coming until he's actually in the White House. It's not happening until
like
early
January.
Because Trump is going to spend the next 3 months burning down the White
January.
House, literally lighting paintings on fire. And then we're
going to
have...
yeah. He's
just stealing
them.
The Lincoln bedroom is on fire.
All right, let us move on to topic number Roman numeral 3. Amy Coney Barrett is the newest justice of the Supreme Court. And what's interesting about that is the confirmation process was rather uneventful. Her swearing in got very little attention, and yet it all happened. How do you folks feel? Amy Coney Barrett, she's now on the Supreme Court.
Well, my husband just got a vasectomy, and I'm very excited about it because clearly I need to be – I'm happy to now be at the point where I'm done having to worry about birthing children. Yeah, it's – you know, it felt like when RBG died, I felt so, so enormously upset by it. And then by the time she was quietly ushered in, I just was dead inside and numb.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's been coming for a really long time. So I think anybody who's been paying attention has been like, this is happening. I think a lot of people just are assuming that it's not. I'm most worried about reproductive rights. And a lot of people are acting like it's not going to happen. And we'll see.
David Cross, how do you feel?
I mean, it's tragic that, you know, because of this weird and antiquated way that we have, you know, the Supreme Court designed as a branch of government, where, you know, you're in for life, which is absurd, weird, and
people used to only live till be like 40.
Yeah,
they're like, wait, you could be 85. Shit, we should change that.
And it, I, all the things you're thinking and all the things I could articulate are upsetting and infuriating. And we all saw this coming, and this wasn't a surprise. And then watching the fecklessness of the Democrats and. Just another example of how weak they are and ineffective, and that these people with these extremist views don't really represent a majority of Americans, not even half of Americans, but it's a very small minority. Not, I shouldn't say small, but it's still a minority, and it really. The thing that I can't, that keeps being so upsetting to me is all the people that, of all the reasons that were given to vote, you know, to swallow your distaste and vote for Hillary Clinton, like this is the one. I mean, of all egregious horrors that have been visited on all kinds of people that aren't myself, I'm fine. I will be fine. In fact, if Trump gets reelected, I'll have more money than I would if Biden got elected. But the world and America will be a much worse off. But for all the people I mean, for any of your gay friends, trans friends, I mean, I just think of all the people who like, hey, man, you got to earn my vote. Well, too late. Too late now. And
that's also such a point of privilege to say that.
Of course. And Amy Coney Barrett is in there for life. And her crazy, crazy, superstitious, weird, patriarchal, nonsensical Christian, crazy Christian Catholic views are in there for life. And she is in the majority. And if you, that's, I just keep going back to all the people who are like, I'm not voting for Hillary. She's a war criminal. Okay.
Well, but I think, I do think sometimes people need to have things happen in their life. It really needs to affect them.
It's not going to happen to them. It's going to happen to everybody else.
Right. But a lot of people it will happen to. I have a, you know, I'm from Ohio. My husband's from South Carolina. You know, there are a lot of people in real, I'm going to, and like I said, I'm done with my childbearing years, but even still living in New York, living in a blue place, abortion will be legal for me. I have money and I live in a liberal city. If I ever needed an abortion, I feel like I can get it. But it's the other people that until it affects them.
That's my point.
And it will affect them. Until it's taken away, I don't think people realize how big of a threat it is.
And I think, and I actually think the turnout that we're seeing, right, we over 80 million people have voted, and that's as of yesterday. We're on track to have more votes than we, you know, far outpace our turnout from last 2016, which was 137 million. They're projecting over 150 million. So I think we are seeing, like, this has motivated people, even though it was 4 years too late, but it has motivated people. And I want to say...
Yeah, but you're making an assumption that all these people that are showing up are voting for Biden. And I don't know... we don't know that yet.
Well, that's true. That I am making that wild assumption, though it does tend to favor the Democrats, this kind of turnout. But you're right. We don't know that yet, which is why definitely keep your phone banking and your texting and your, you know, talking to neighbors. But I think one thing just to kind of get, you know, give us an option for how to feel okay in the future is that we will eventually have this office, right? It's not like Republicans have it forever or Democrats have it forever. And when we do, we'll be able to make some changes. I honestly think a commission could come up with a lot of interesting and creative ways to minimize the term of Supreme Court justices, either to add justices. There are ways out of this. I don't think it's the I don't think we're just in it for some 40-year dire nightmare.
I think if Trump's reelected, we are.
I agree.
I don't, I mean, we are in it for another 4 year nightmare, but we don't, I don't think it's an, I don't think it's something that literally lasts decades. This is a pendulum that goes back and forth.
I disagree. I think you're wrong. I think you're wrong.
Well, also, I think what's frustrating to me is even if there are creative ways to get out of this, we have so many massive things we need to do and climate change, you know, financial crisis and people losing their jobs. Even if we win, and even if we get the Senate and the House, that's a very short amount of time to get a lot of shit done. And if we have to focus this, focus our time on figuring out how to, you know, get, you only have a small amount of time to get some stuff done. I mean, you think about Obama spent all of his time getting healthcare done. And that was, I mean, he did a lot of stuff, but that was like the key cornerstone thing that he could get done. You know, how are we going to be able to do a Green New Deal if we're spending the first 2 years of a all Democratic Congress and Senate and presidency figuring out how to clean up this shit. I mean, it's frustrating. It's frustrating to have to spend the time and energy on this. But I do think sometimes people need to lose rights to realize.
But also,
that it's, gone.
It's frustrating. But what is our alternative is that we have to do it. I mean, there's no,
I know.
You know what I mean? That's the alternative. It is. It's extremely frustrating. Though I guess I don't see the point of thinking that there's no way out. I don't see the point of that thinking. I do see ways out. I see ways out with local government. I see ways out with, you know, additional elections, other future elections. This thing is meant to grow and evolve.
The election process has already been so perverted. And this, I truly believe, is the last chance for anything left of center right to have any capability of correcting any of these things. I think this is literally our last chance because there are so many things in place. Those will only exponentially get increased and worsened. And I don't think you'll truly have, I mean, it already is veering away from the facade of a true democracy. And I think if these folks are validated and given, you know, the ability that they have to just kind of steamroll over everything, we haven't seen anything. I mean, if they're in for a second term and a lame duck at that, I mean, all bets are off. And I don't mean to dissuade you of any optimism. I just don't think there may be some victories in a local election, but it's not going to, outside of who's on the school board and your CSA, I don't think you're going to have that many victories.
Well, I mean, I disagree with you there because, for example, the rate of transmission in New York is the lowest in the country. And we have that low rate of transmission for a variety of reasons, but one of them is our leadership, and that's leadership that I voted for, right? And so there are differences in it still is a republic of
states. New York. Okay. New York will be different. Trump has threatened to withhold federal funds. And they'll find a way to do that. And your services are going to, you're not going to be able to have sanitation pick up three times a week. That'll be taken away. You know that knock on wood, there is those guys are out of office. You know that immediately every Republican is all of a sudden going to be for austerity and, reverse themselves on deficit spending, and all of a sudden they're going to care about a deficit. If those folks get in, I mean, we're already over $1 trillion. We have a $1 trillion deficit, and they're just going to withhold all kinds of funds. You're not going to have the MTA, forget it.
I'm basically saving all of that till next week. In my brain, I'm like, listen. If Trump wins, starting Tuesday, everything will seem hopeless and terrible. And this might be the last 4 days of hope and optimism that I have.
I hear you.
So I'm holding on to this. This is my one time to be like, maybe the future is good. And then starting on Tuesday, then I cry.
Right.
Not saying I haven't cried at all in 2020, but I've made a choice that this week is optimism.
I want wait a couple days. Wait, like Cody is talking about. Wait,
but then I want you to see what gloom and doom.
I want you to see what Stephen Miller has planned if they win re-election.
I'll call you on Tuesday. But
don't do it now. But go. You just check and see what he's not able to put out there because it's too polarizing and inflammatory and extreme in an election cycle. And I'm not kidding. Horrific shit.
It is terrifying, but I do think, too, COVID is hitting people now. So COVID started off in New York City, and it was like, oh, it's a New York problem, and oh, all those liberals died. That's terrible, but it's not coming to my hometown. And it is. It's coming to people's hometowns. And so obviously, I want everyone to be okay. I don't want anyone to get sick. I don't want anyone to die. But this is something
I do not feel the same.
This is something that people can't ignore. The way that this has been handled shows the fault lines in the two parties, shows the way the difference in thinking people, the difference that Republicans and Democrats have. We believe that people should be paid to stay home and not die. And they believe people should be forced to go to work regardless if they have pre-existing conditions that make them more susceptible to, illness or death from COVID, and that at the end of the day, we can't spend money to save people, to save families. And so I think, after we get through this winter, which is going to be a very rough winter no matter what, maybe some people will start to rethink.
And I want to close off by saying,
again, that's all for Tuesday and past.
I want to close off by saying, I mean, you know, look, we have literally our official merch for Fake the Nation is a T-shirt that says we're only doing optimism, hilariously. but I am that person. I'm totally that person. And it's not, look, there's, I, in the 200 whatever years of the Republic, there have been other shitty, shitty times. And people have felt as dark and horrible as you know, as any one of us might feel right now. But we've survived, right? And I just think, A, let's not Y2K this situation and just assume that everything's going to be horrible, right? And then maybe be wrong about it. Also, let's not create a self-fulfilling prophecy. The more we talk about this, about losing, about this, like the more we're just making it happen, right? And that, I think,
that doesn't make any sense to me.
No, and I totally get that kind of thing does not make sense, you know, to you. But I think that.
But I think factually that's incorrect.
What
I think just by merely talking about something in a realistic, albeit negative, way or understanding and accepting the negative parts of it doesn't mean it's self-fulfilling prophecy.
No. I mean, self-fulfilling prophecies aren't like scientifically proven or anything, but I'm just saying like it seems to, you know, to keep talking about riots that are going to erupt on the day after the elections is not helpful in keeping people calm. What we want, what we would love from our leaders, right, is to say, hey guys, this is an election, stay calm. Like, we've done this before, it's not a big deal. We're obviously not hearing that from some of our leadership. And so it's creating more of this, you know, this fervor and this angst. And I think that, like, for all of us and to our neighbors, I think it's important to be like, hey, we're going to just do this election. We're going to see what happens. Democracy takes time. Democracy doesn't get announced on the same day all the time. The framers, in fact, didn't say anything about fucking Lester Holt announcing the results the same night. So everybody, like, give it a beat. Let democracy do its job. You know what I mean? And then we'll see what happens. You know?
Hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
Hope for the best, prepare for the worst.
That's my parenting motto.
Yeah, that's a good one. all right. Well, let us move on to the final topic for the day. That's topic subclause 4A, fall. Oh, no, sorry, you guys. Before I forget, racist to watch. This is, which is not racist to watch. I've been told that I pronounce it poorly. Races to watch. Races to watch is basically the entire show.
Exactly.
From 2016 onward. The Illinois 6th Congressional District has a scientist, Sean Kasten, defending his seat from Janine Ives, who is a frightening MAGA fan. So thanks to Twitter peeps for letting me know about that race. Also, Kara Eastman in Nebraska's 3rd, right? Now, take a look. Candace Valenzuela in Texas's 24th district, and Louise Snodgrass, the working class candidate running in District 7 from South Dakota, folks. And I know we have listeners in South Dakota, in fact. So check out those races. They are part of our races to watch. All right. Next topic, final topic. We read a piece in Jezebel. It sounded like I said Jezebel. We read a piece in Jezebel by Hazel Sills, and I'm going to read the first paragraph. She writes, as the lush green trees of the Northeast begin to brown and a chill rolls through the now darkened hours of the early morning, she appears every autumn, like truth coming out of her well, the white girl who absolutely loves fall. The piece is called How America Invented the White Woman Who Just Loves Fall. And my question for you guys is this, like, I grew up in the desert and, like, with some stints in Paris because I'm so worldly, it's not a big deal. But I grew up in the desert and we didn't have like a thing that happened in the fall, like fall sort of came and went. I don't remember this being a part of my childhood, but we also didn't have weather. Has fall always been this blunt instrument of, precious ornamentation? Was it like that for wherever you grew up in the country? Or is this just a more modern phenomenon?
I feel like you sent this article for me because I don't know if your listeners can tell, but I am a white woman. I'm very white. My name is Cody Lindquist. That's very white. Yeah, I mean, I love fall. I know. I guess I'm that basic woman that they were talking about. Although I don't like pumpkin spice lattes anymore. That was very 2010. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm from Ohio, so the changing of the seasons was always like a big deal. But it was interesting. This article talked about, you know, sort of the history of fall and the history of Thanksgiving and how it's sort of whitewashed, you know, everything, which sort of like the celebration of Thanksgiving, as we all have come to know, is very whitewashed. But yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting to see the evolution of the white woman image, you know. But yeah, I guess we all buy into it.
David Cross, was this a part of your childhood? Was fall a big deal for you?
Yeah, this article just sounds like one of those things. Like, what am I supposed to write about? Shoot, I've got a deadline. I know that there's probably enough people that'll be interested and throw it around on Twitter for 10 minutes to, you know, justify my writing this thing. I don't know. This is a silly, dumb thing. I haven't read the article. I'm just going off of the premise and the
I got to get something that white women will click said. On. Let me put them in the title.
Well, men, I mean, men are a big part of, I enjoy the fall. I love it. I also love all four seasons. I really do. And I love the change of seasons. And, you know, you don't have as big a change from spring to summer or, fall to winter so much, but you do have a big summer to fall. Especially if it's hot. I grew up in Georgia, but I lived all over the place. And, there are all kinds of things around the idea of fall and in a spiritual sense, this idea that we had this summer of growth and relaxation and luxury, not luxury so much, but, you know,
renewal. You know,
and it's beautiful. And now we're starting a new cycle. And there's all kinds of things that appeal to just your base human experience. And it's the scent of burning leaves and burning wood and fires and the comfort of gathering around a fire and, you know, dumb things like hot chocolate, you know, which have evolved in a, you know, pumpkin spice lattes or whoever gives it, whatever the fuck, I don't care what you drink, but it's nice. It's a thing that I'm not a white woman, but I enjoy fall. I appreciate it. I kind of have, there's an excitement to it, just like any change of season. So that article just seems like they had to write an article.
Right,
I think if pressed, I don't know this woman at all, but she probably truly does give a shit.
What was interesting about it, she rooted it in the patriarchy. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
She did a decent job of laying out some of the political and institutional and commercial forces that sort of bring us this notion of fall.
Oh, for sure. You know, for sure. Like, everything. Yes, no, absolutely. Without question, we have, and you're going to do that in capitalist societies anyway. It's everything's marketed. Everything's marketable. There's a marketing thing behind everything. There is even the backlash to the marketing, which is in itself its own marketing and branding. Like, fuck pumpkin spice latte. You know, that's its own thing. And I'm sure there are T-shirts and bumper stickers and things that you can sell and people make money by being anti fall, but right. That's all. I mean, that's an American tradition.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things that I, you know, like, for example, I didn't realize that Martha Stewart played such a big role in fall decoration and apparently getting gourds to be popular. Like, I just thought gourds were popular from day one, you know, didn't know that she kind of helped popularize fucking gourds. I didn't you know, she,
well, I remember from being a kid, I remember
the gourds were popular.
Yeah. What's the horn or whatever, the drawing.
Cornucopia?
Oh, yeah, that thing. Sure,
cornucopia.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
I remember that from when I was a kid.
Sure, yeah. It's, you know,
and
she,
unless
but she
Martha
talks
Stewart
about,
was an influencer at age 12, then.
but she talks about sort of making it the, like, suburban wife fantasy of the gourd and, like, decorating your home in a specific way. And I can see how her magazine
did that. That's been around. For sure.
Well, also, here's something I didn't realize. Franklin Delano Roosevelt moved Thanksgiving to an earlier date, and he did it to accommodate retailers who were worried about consumers not having enough time to do their holiday shopping. Didn't realize realize that, but there you go. There's all of these commercial forces.
Why didn't he move it back earlier? Thanksgiving is way too close to Christmas. It's such bullshit. Like, I don't need to see my family two times in 3 weeks when I haven't seen them all year.
Think it's too close.
It's so dumb.
Can I just say, like, I'm not a white girl, but I also, I have never been drawn to autumn shit. I don't give a fuck at all. I view fall as the time of things starting to die. I find it very depressing. The days get shorter. Things are visibly dying in front of your face. Like, the pumpkin spice latte doesn't even have any fucking pumpkin in it. It's basically cinnamon. We're fooling ourselves with pumpkin flavors.
Pumpkin doesn't have any taste anyway. It's just the it holds the...
I mean, I like a pumpkin
pie
at Thanksgiving.
You like the nutmeg and the cinnamon and the... Yeah.
Right, I guess it's that. Right, exactly. I don't like sweater weather. Like, I don't care. I think everyone's sweater looks just completely average. None of your sweaters are interesting to me. None of your, you know, knee-length boots are interesting to me. I don't like the look. I don't care. Can I enjoy a foliage? Yeah, I can look upon a foliage and be like, that's nice, but I don't crave it. I don't want to drive out to go see it. Like, I just fully 100% don't care.
Again,
I grew up around cacti. We didn't have foliage, so I don't know. Maybe it's just like my, you know, my root speaking, but I've never gotten it.
I love it. But I'm a white woman. I'm trained to love
but
it
But I also
from birth.
Think of everyone who lived in the rest of the country as living in a movie. You know, because to me, fall and all that stuff was just something I saw in the movies. So it almost still feels like if I go to fucking, you know, the Berkshires or whatever, I just feel like you guys are joking, right? Like, this is all a movie set. Like, it just feels so on the nose. And then maybe what I'm asking for is, can we add a little, like, an edge to fall? You know what I mean? Where's the punk of fall? You know what I mean? That's what I want to see. It's so fucking precious.
Everything is precious. I think maybe as humans, we just need some sort of, like, time marker to get us through seasonal affective disorder. So we're like, let's make it fun.
Yeah.
And then we have to make Christmas fun. And then, oh, Halloween.
Right. No,
Valentine's Day.
And in terms of the premise of this article, like, I don't care that white girls like fall. Like, also, everybody's allowed to have fun. And I think that is a really good hashtag, we're only doing optimism. But I think that is a really good point about fall, is that it is, you know, fun for some people. And I am 100% on board for people having fun and having a reason to celebrate and a reason to be joyful and a reason to, like, be with their families and talk to their neighbors and fucking carve pumpkins or whatever. Like, I get that that stuff is cute, it's fun or whatever. I'm not particularly drawn to it, but I 100% support people's fun. And listeners, I am willing to, like, hear otherwise if you have a secret to, like, why fall matters to you so much. You know, bring it. I'm here for that.
I carved pumpkins last weekend. That was very, very fun.
All right. And, you know, I have a kid now, so I guess I got to do shit like
you
that.
You do, and then they don't carve them themselves, and then you're stuck carving a very complicated thing that they've requested for, like, an hour, and they've run off. They're over it. And you're like, oh, you did this for 1 minute, and now I'm carving, like, a very complicated Mario character.
You got to do Wally and Eve.
If you're a perfectionist, it is a nightmare.
Okay, well, I like to end the show by asking, now I know this is going to be tough considering our last conversation, but I do like to ask to end the show, and here we are, we're just days before the election deadline. What is making you feel hopeful? And it could be small, it could be something so small like a Pop-Tart, or it could be something so large like the turnout in Georgia. Whatever it is, what is making you feel hopeful? Cody Linguist.
I have I have relatives in South Carolina, and one of them, who's not an older white man, said that he thinks it's going to be a Biden landslide based on his friends and how they're voting, and that shocked me.
Okay,
and gave me some hope.
Okay,
I mean,
I'll take that. That sounds lovely.
Yeah, again, totally anecdotal, but I was like, oh, interesting.
Yeah, I have one of my BFFs is in South Carolina, and she talked about a crazy voter turnout in South Carolina, and And she can sort of tell the, you know, the Republicans from the Democrats. And she had like a similar experience. And she didn't use any kinds of word like landslide.
Which yeah, landslide. Feels, I was like, okay.
A bit much, yeah. Buddy. But
I'm not saying
but
that.
She definitely had some positive thoughts about her experience. David Cross, what is making you feel hopeful?
Well, I've got some leftover MDMA, which I just dip into every once in a while when things get super bleak. And I got enough to last me until early November, so we'll see how that goes.
All right, Cody Linquist, where do people find you and all the wonderful things you do?
You can check me out on Our Cartoon President on Showtime on Sunday nights. This Sunday and great show.
Oh, such an awesome show. You do such a fantastic job. Definitely check that out. David Cross, where do people find you?
Walking my dog. I got to walk my dog 3 times a day. You might have met Ollie, actually. You might have met her.
I did. I think I did. Yeah. He used to play in that basketball court sometimes.
Yeah, when she was a puppy, yeah. But, you can check out The Dark Divide. It's good. It's good. It's not anything I've ever done before. It's a dramatic role.
Oh, shit. Okay, yeah. I'm really excited to see this. Folks, The Dark Divide, definitely see it. And like I said, then go and consume everything he's ever made because he is one of the greats. And folks, you know where to find me. And I just had a piece come out in a Far magazine about the future of global travel, which I think is interesting. They asked me to redefine a global citizen, and then I did. I also have a piece in the Progressive magazine, my regular column, Hemming and Hawing. And I also wrote the TED Fellows newsletter for the TED organization. And you can check that out online as well. And it's about keeping democracy on your to-do list. Folks, all of it is super optimistic. Even though I recognize things could go wrong, I still am trying to keep my spirits up about all of the possibilities. But you know that about me, folks. What I really want to do is thank the production team here at Fake the Nation. That's our producer, Anita Flores, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens, Gabby Alter wrote our theme music, Lily Fleshler helps with research. Folks, we love to hear from you. Send us your feedback, topics we should be chatting about, guest ideas you might have. You can leave us a voicemail at 331-901-0005 or drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. And if you like what you hear, favorite Fake the Nation on Stitcher, follow us on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts because it helps people find the show. And then in general, just tell your friends. All right, thank you so much, and we'll be back in your earballs next week.